Today, we're going to be talking about testosterone, risks, benefits, options that you have. Most important thing you can take away from this episode is that testosterone causes infertility.
This is the Man Up Podcast, the doctor's guide to men's health. Each week on our podcast, we interview the top specialists of the field on various topics of men's health. If you have questions that you are too afraid to ask, we have the answers. This week, our episode is titled, So You're Interested in Taking Testosterone. I'm Dr. Kevin June. I'm joined, as always, with my co-host, Dr. Justin Dubin. Loving your sweater today, buddy.
Hey, man, Big Ten represent. I mean, it was technically Big Ten versus Big Ten at the college football championship. This is not to represent Washington colors. I was on Michigan.
So you were go blue.
Who are you rooting for?
I was, you know, because we have some friends who are in Michigan. So, you know, I really didn't have much skin in the game. So, yeah, I thought it was nice that Michigan won, but hey, I think that Penix kid is going to be a good guy in the NFL. I think he's going to be a player. Yeah, I don't know.
I think so. Maybe the Giants will draft him. Probably not. Maybe the Steelers will draft him because maybe he'll fall down that low.
What do you mean? We got Mason Rudolph. We're in the playoffs, baby. We are.
Big ass head, very ugly dude, in my opinion. But you know what? It's a good story.
Hey, look. Hey, you know. A couple years ago, Nick Foles and the Philadelphia Eagles made a run.
Correct.
Just saying. So
listen, you're going into Buffalo. I think you're going to end up being a 9-point underdog.
It's 10. Probably. I just 10. Checked the line. It's it was 10. 10.
It's 10. 10-point underdog. It's not impossible. You know, you have a good defense. Yeah.
The odds were so crazy on the money line. I took that.
I am not going to be taking that. Sorry.
Well, anyways.
Hopefully TJ Watt plays. That's your biggest thing.
No, I think he's out. He's out for the, you know.
With the MCL.
With the MCL. But, you know, I think they showed that the record of the Steelers without TJ Watt is 1-10. So that's not a good look, you know.
That's not going to be good. But
wait, let's talk about the Giants, though.
Yeah.
Wait, let's talk about this defensive coordinator that like jetted off to Florida.
Yeah, Wink Martindale. I'm not very happy about that. I really liked Wink Martindale. He was a great defensive coordinator. There was chat during the year that him and Daboll were not getting along.
Yeah.
And it seems that he was going to stay. And the reports now are that basically Daboll fired all of his guys except for him. And then he was just really pissed about it and just said, I'm done, which stinks. You know, I hope Danny Dimes doesn't. I mean, he's going to be there. I hope we draft a quarterback. Some people are projecting we draft a wide receiver, which is the last thing we need. We need actually linemen, offensive linemen, and a quarterback.
You guys draft a receiver or a running back, right?
Yeah, it would just be a disaster. It's just an absolute disaster. So there's very little hope at this current moment as a Giants fan.
I mean, it's shown in football now. You got to really build out the line, right? And then you can have like whatever kind of quarterback back there, as long as you're able to kind of nail a pass. Like, you know, hey, look, Brock Purdy, he's pretty good, but his team is effing good.
Unbelievable. I agree. Yeah. I agree. I mean, it starts with the line. It starts with the line. Everyone who you draft is probably capable of throwing a good pass if they're not under pressure. And that's what you have to do.
You're absolutely correct.
So we'll know at least the score of your game by the time that this airs on Monday. So that will be fun. Dolphins are going to get crushed, by the way.
Wait, what'd you say?
Dolphins are going to get crushed. It's going to be 0 degrees out.
It's anti-Miami weather in Kansas City. So.
All right.
Well, you know, but they had a good run, man. They could prove us wrong. Can't say.
Correct. You know. Anything's possible. So you never know.
I would like to see Miami win, though.
I wouldn't mind it. But let's get into the episode. So today we're going to be talking about testosterone in general testosterone things, risks, benefits, options that you have. Because a lot of people, as we know, are interested in testosterone. Most people, especially now, it's all over social media. It's everywhere you go. Everyone's talking about it. And we kind of just give you a user's guide or a guide to for people who are interested in learning. And, you know, unfortunately, online and through some of these companies that I've done research through, they're not giving you the full breadth of information. They're not discussing all your options, and they're not giving you all the risks. So that's been a concern. I think that's what the most important thing you can take away from this episode is that testosterone causes infertility. That's end stop. That's it. Causes infertility. So if you're taking testosterone and you want to have a good kid, you should go talk to a urologist. And we're going to record an episode actually as soon as we're done recording this intro on the alternative options to preserving infertility and increasing your testosterone. And if you are thinking about taking testosterone and you want to have kids, go talk to a urologist before you do so to learn about those other options.
I think that last thing you touched upon is very important. And I have a lot of patients that show up where they're like, I didn't know urologists like prescribe testosterone. And they're so like, they you know, and I don't blame them. So they, you know, there's a lot of online health companies or even men's health clinics that offer testosterone, and some of them do it very well. I'm not saying that they don't,
correct,
but urologists and endocrinologists, I'd say, conventionally treat, you know, patients who are hypogonadal, who have low testosterone. And so we're rather well versed in it. So we understand the risks. We understand the benefits. We understand how to follow up with it. And so that's a resource that you can go to get, you know, see first off, if you meet kind of requirements to getting testosterone and as well as how to do it safely. So I think that that point of that there is an area in medicine that especially kind of gets extra trained on it.
Yeah, for sure. And just so I think you're going to enjoy this episode. I think it's a great starter to get you thinking about testosterone. If you're thinking about it, things you might want to know from an educated source like us. Once again, this is just a starter. You know, we always recommend talking to a healthcare professional, you know, trying not to buy this stuff on the black market because you don't know what that shit's in there. I have in South Florida, I'm sure you in LA know a lot of guys that have been on a lot of shit. And sometimes we don't know what's in it. So just be careful out there.
Absolutely. That's a good point. So why don't we just jump straight into this episode? Really informative. And hope you guys enjoy it.
Enjoy, guys. As men's health specialists, we know guys are shaving their balls. Yeah, we examine a lot of you, so we literally see it. But we also have the data showing it, too.
That's right. According to research, over 85% of men trim their pubes. Not only that, but research shows that over 70% of women prefer a partner with at least partially trimmed pubic hair.
So, guys, we know you're trimming the hedges, and we know that most women prefer you manscape. So if you're going to shave your balls, why not use the best men's grooming kit around? We're talking about Manscaped.
With the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, you get the Lawnmower 4.0 with their all-new skin-safe electric trimmer that protects your balls from getting those cuts we've all had in the past. You also get the Weed Whacker 2.0 for trimming your nose and ear hairs. And let me tell you guys, we all need to do a better job of this.
Yep, that's right. Kevin and I both have the performance package and we really love it. Manscaping has never been easier for us. And for our listeners, we have a special promotion. Go to manscaped.com and enter promo code MANUP and get 20% off your first purchase.
Go get your Manscaped products today. Your balls and your partner will thank you. All right, so today we are going to talk all things related to different types of testosterone. I have a lot of patients come in, you know, they've been diagnosed by their primary care doc that, hey, they got low T. And so one of the first questions they always come up and ask me are like, doc, just give me the menu. Tell me all different types, you know, what are the different types of testosterone therapy out there and what are the pros and cons? So Justin and I sat down and for this episode, we thought it'd be a fantastic idea just to give kind of a primer on the different types of testosterone. So let's kind of get into it. So the first thing that we're going to talk about are injectables. So Justin, give us some background on testosterone injectables.
Yeah, well, I just want to piggyback off of the one thing you said. What is great about testosterone is you do have a menu of options. If it's, you know, we're able to cater to your preference and how you want to take testosterone, if you want to take testosterone, if you're eligible. So all these options, in theory, are pretty much equivocal, I think is something important to say. There are some preferences for certain situations, which we will probably delve into a little bit. But in general, you know, they're all pretty good options to get, you know, therapeutic levels of testosterone and feel better if you are struggling with low testosterone or hypogonadism, as we call it. So I think the most popular form is really injections, right? So there's really commonly the most common breakdown of testosterone or compound is testosterone cypionate. Now there's different forms, there's different pharmaceutical esterase forms and all this stuff. Right. Now, what's the difference, right? There's another one that's called testosterone enanthate, which I always struggle saying enanthate.
Me too, man. Me too.
and they're pretty similar, okay? The difference is really this, the half-life of the medications. Testosterone cypionate lasts a little bit longer, about half-life about 8 days. Enanthate is a half-life about 7 days. And in general, you're like, does that really matter? For the most part, it kind of doesn't. The real big difference here is that, you know, typically test SIP, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's some people that do it once every 2 weeks injections. I prefer at least once a week.
That's a great discussion here. Let's go a little bit off tangent here. So what do you do for test SIP? What do you do? You said you do it once a week, or what do you start off with usually?
I think the standard for almost everyone now is you start off with 100 milligrams a week, which is half of a cc IM injections. And, you know, one size doesn't fit all the time, right. But in general, you can get a pretty good level. Now, what you have to understand about injections is, you know, because it is a medicine that you're putting in at one time, you're going to have a high testosterone at the first day of injection, you know, starting after that injection. And it's going to start gradually declining. And because that half-life is about 8 days, that's right. Why we're doing it once a week. Now, if you do a higher dose, that dosage will last longer in your body, which is why, you know, some people do 200 milligrams, which is one cc every week. Now, personally, I'm not as big of a fan of that because I think that you can crash, like you'll feel the higher high, but you also, you know, towards that the end of, you know, that first week, a lot of patients that I've seen complain, and I've been referred to a lot of patients who are being treated for injections once every 2 weeks, and they're saying they just don't feel the benefits because they're so down on that second week. I don't know, Kevin, you feel the same way on that?
Well, I think it's a tricky question because we treat a lot of patients for testosterone, and you kind of touched on it before. There isn't a one-size-fits-all for a lot of patients. And
Right. Some
patients, I agree with you, I start off with 100 milligrams in injection per week. All right, I start off with that. And some guys, I go up to 150. Some guys, 100 is good enough. But yeah, right. Exactly to your point. Some are like, yeah, by the end of the week, I feel much more crappy. And that's where it's kind of interesting where you can kind of change the way you do it. I have some guys who are like, hey, I do 75 1 week and the next week I do 110. I have no idea how that works, but it works for them. And then they go back to the 75 the week after. I'm like, hey, it's okay. As long as we're following your labs and everything after that and you feel good and your T's at a level that we're okay with, that's totally fine by me. So that's what's cool about testosterone. It's a lot of trial and error to a certain degree.
Yeah, and you are going off your patients in this conversation. And that's why it's important if you're taking testosterone or you're interested in taking testosterone to have a good relationship with your provider. Because, you know, a lot of this testosterone treatment, as you're going to hear, and as you've already heard, is really based off of how you're feeling, how your labs are in response to the medication. And we can kind of manipulate that and play around with it. So yeah, you know, listen, the injections for a SIP, I typically do once a week. The enanthate, when I have given it, you know, certain people have come to me requesting enanthate. They actually like the shorter acting. I've typically done that. You can do it weekly. You know, there is the commercial one called Xiested, which some people are familiar with. That's a subcutaneous. Now, most of the injections we're talking about here are intramuscular. Intramuscular has word muscle, you know, you're putting it, I usually recommend on the upper outside part of the butt, or you can do it on the outside of the thigh. Subcutaneous, you're doing it really into your fat. It's really going to be mostly, in your belly is around usually where they do it. And it's for the XYOSTED, it's usually one injection a week. But if I'm giving true testinanthate, I actually end up usually giving it about twice a week.
Wow.
Dose. Yeah. I've found some success with that. And
that's interesting.
It's just something that, because of the shorter half-life, I feel like the patients that I've put on testinanthate have enjoyed the two injections. Now, if you're interested in one injection, we can make it work. But I feel like a lot of the guys that do one injection, I usually push more towards test sip. But that's just, once again, this is just us trying our own style here. There's no real right or wrong answer.
Right.
What
yeah.
Do you use XYOSTED or how do you do it?
So I'm a big XYOSTED fan just because of its subcutaneous, way of introduction. IMs are, it's no joke, right? It's a longer needle that you have to get in there to give the intramuscular injection. So I love these sub-Q formulations that XYOSTED offers. That said, if a patient wants the weekly kind of on the way that you go, I generally prefer T-cypionate. It's much more widely available.
Yes.
Much more compounding pharmacies can get it. So if you're looking at it from a cost perspective, which you should, right? XYOSTED is one of those things you want to try to get insurance coverage, and it can be a bit more difficult in getting coverage. But I love the whole idea of XYOSTED and its subcutaneous formulation.
Yeah, I think it's it can be not fun for a lot of patients. And one of the big things that when we're talking about injections, the two things that people don't like, well, the one thing is obviously the needles, right? So if you're
right.
scared of needles, probably not the thing for you.
Probably not the way to go.
Yeah. And here's the other thing that I find interesting. And I've talked with a lot of patients about this. A lot of patients, when I've put them on the injections, they assume that they have to come in every week. I don't do that. I don't know if you do that. But I am not a fan of doing that. I think that I teach you how to do it. I have my nurse teach you how to do it. My nurse practitioner, you're on your own. A lot of my patients have their partner do it for them so that they can get help. I mean, I want to know what your stance is on that.
So in our office, we do offer patients come in for a nurse visit and they'll get the injection via the nurse.
Okay.
I agree with you. I think a lot of it's from our training, but I think a patient, you're really empowered when you learn how to administer yourself, right?
Yes.
And so I strongly, and then you're not on our schedule. You're not having to come into the office every week mm-hmm. for an injection. The whole idea of T therapy, especially these self-injections, is that you can do it at home. And then you come
in to see me
to get the labs monitored, make sure you're doing okay. What adjustments do we have? But the actual application, an IM injection is something that you can learn and can be done at home. So I agree with you. We do offer in our offices the ability for them to come in, but I agree with you too. It should be something that you can be able to do yourself.
That's my stance. I agree 100%. And then the final thing that you need to know with the injections, because you're injecting usually a higher dose that, as we said, trickles down over the week or 2 weeks or however time you want to do it, you're at a higher risk for something called erythropoiesis or erythrocytosis. EPO, whatever. Yeah. So that's increased red blood cells, right? So when we talk about testosterone, it is an anabolic steroid. I always mm-hmm. think build stuff, right? So you're building muscle mass, building bones, and you're also increasing red blood cell proliferation. So theoretically, you can increase your red blood cell thickness, and that's something that we always watch. I actually have a couple patients whose red blood cell thickness is too high, and what we talk about is hematocrit. The guidelines say 54. Some people are a little bit closer to 52. I usually am around the range. If you get to around 53, I start getting a little worried. And there's different things we can do, but one of them is donate blood. There's ways we can change injections to once every 2 weeks to once a week, or we can do it, twice a week to lower those spikes and those highs so that you're not stimulating that red blood cell proliferation as much. But, yeah, what is the concern about having increased blood thickness, Kevin?
Well, if your blood's getting too thick, you're going to lead to a potential for cardiovascular events, right? And so that's the big problem with it. And that's why it's so important. And I have guys come in and they tell me that they take testosterone off label without any sort of lab, you know, any sort of lab workup.
Yeah,
great. It's so important to just follow the guidelines, because if you do, you're going to be able to take tea appropriately. And Justin and I think there's so many great benefits to tea. But if you're outside those guidelines, such as this one, look, the hematocrit, that's like one of the most important baseline numbers I want to know. At a lot of these conferences that Justin and I go into, one of the big discussions is like, all right, it's important to know the baseline, but like, what's the delta? What's the change? Maybe that's right. The big thing. And sometime in the future, we may kind of get into that. But at a baseline, if your hematocrit is close to 51, 52%, I get a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. I get a little nervous. I'm like, hey, you know, you're carrying some extra risks by starting this tea. So we're going to really have to closely monitor you. And you're probably going to have to do some phlebotomy more often than not to try to keep it below the 54. But Justin, what's your – wait, so you said you're – like, do you have a baseline that you kind of cut off at or no?
To start them on injections specifically, probably not. I mean, if they're obviously starting at 54, I'm probably going to be like, something's up, and you send them to a hematologist, right?
Yes.
In our guidelines, we do say that if you have increased blood thickness to start, you probably should get some kind of evaluation by a hematologist to see why it's that high, because it's not typical to be that high. So, you know, obviously I think I would send them to someone before I got approval. I have had a couple of patients who do have this problem where they were donating so much blood that they became actually anemic, like iron deficient anemic. And then I was, you know, so I came in and I worked with the hematologist to kind of figure out what the right regimen is, what the correct options are for that patient. And thank God, you know, we're okay right now, but you know, it is a real thing that can happen. It's not often. But this is an important consideration, especially when we're talking about injections.
Yeah, that's a great point. And another thing on injections is also, I counsel my patients that there are rather wide fluctuations that you're going to feel on tea. Like, you're going to feel the tea with injections. With some of the other modalities that we'll go over, it's a little bit more of a, you know, less high peaks, less low valleys, kind of as you kind of mentioned with the crashes that you may feel. So with teas, you're going to feel some of these ups and downs, and they're going to be a little bit more pronounced. And for some guys, they're not going to like that. And that's why the other modalities may be better options.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some people just don't like, you know, even if it's once a week, they can't remember and they don't like that. Sometimes it's easier just to remember to take it once a day, which kind of leads us into our next one, right? So that's kind of a big summary of the injections.
Yep.
Probably the most popular. If I don't take testosterone, if I were to take testosterone, I personally would probably take injections. I don't know how you feel about that.
Same. Just from what I see with my patients, I think if you're going to be on testosterone therapy, I think the injections are, you know, pretty good. They really get you to your treatment goals, which I think is important.
Yeah. And I would want to feel it personally.
You and I both.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So the next option is gels and patches. And we'll put these together because they're pretty much the same. You know, the brand name is called Androgel.
Yep.
Kevin, just give us a little breakdown of what these do, how you use them.
Yeah. So both, you know, patches, gels, these are topical testosterone therapies. And the way I commonly introduce these to my patients who are thinking of testosterone therapy is that this is kind of like the gateway. You're kind of afraid of like getting the really big ups and downs. You're not trying to be, you know, stereotype like a bodybuilder. And you're like, I just want to get my T's up a little bit, try to address some of the mild hypogonadal symptoms I have. So I'm going to try it. So the one I commonly use is just the Androgel, the pump formulation. And the way I recommend to patients, I go like, look, just give two pumps, one on each shoulder. That's the way I do it. And you do it daily, right? Two pumps, one on each shoulder, daily. And it's a pretty good therapy. You're not going to feel it, right? Just as we were kind of talking about the injections, you're not going to really feel it. But over time, you're going to slowly raise up your serum testosterone. The main problem, I would say, with topical testosterone is the potential for transference. It takes time to dry. So you're going to have to make sure that if you have kids or you have grandkids around or even your partner, you don't want them touching this soon after you place it, because you can give them testosterone. And so that I think is the main disadvantage with him. And besides that, it's a very subtle feel. That's what I see from my patients. For some patients, it's enough, but it's kind of a subtle feel. I don't know, Justin, your thoughts.
I always ask every person that is here to talk to me with about tea. I ask, do they have kids? Do they have grandkids? If they do, how old they are? That's the first question. And if they are, like I say, do they climb up on you? Do they touch you like on your shoulders? Cause listen, I'm in Florida. You're in LA. People don't wear shirts, right? Like they're not wearing shirts. They're on at the pool. They're at
not
the
as frequent as Miami, but yes, agreed. Right. Agreed.
So, you know, if anyone has a grandchild or a child that is of age where they're climbing on you, they're sitting on you, I say this isn't for you. Now, I was reviewing the data on transference. It's actually relatively low, but it's not worth the risk, because if you transfer testosterone and you induce like pre-puberty to like a child or as a male or female, it's a fucking disaster. It's not something you want to mess around with.
It's also kind of hard. I think it's hard to like detect. Like you wouldn't even know it for a while. Yeah, like, you know, you're a kid and you're just getting slowly exposed. I mean, Justin and I deal with fertility a lot, and exposure to certain stuff is something that we're always thinking about in the back of our heads. So, you know, testosterone just being passively past your kids, bad idea. I completely agree with you.
Yeah. And then there's two other things I always talk about with androgel. One is timing of it. I ask the patient, I say, hey, when do you shower? Whenever during that day, after, if it's in the morning, take it right after you shower, put it on. If it's at night, put it on right before you go to bed after you shower, because you want to maximize the exposure time on your skin. The other thing is, and this is more of a Florida thing, I need to know what their job is, because if they're outside working all day, androgel is not a good option for them. Why? They're sweating. It's not sticking to them. It's usually not a good option. I've tried it for a couple guys who are working construction, or, you know, even police officers who are, you know, or firemen who are wearing a lot of stuff. They sweat it out. It doesn't stick. It doesn't stay on them. So if you're someone who's outside a lot and you're a big sweater, I don't think that this is probably the best option for you. Just because we want to optimize your absorption. And sometimes it's not going to do it, especially in a hot place like Florida.
That's a great point. I didn't really ever think about that. And that kind of makes sense. It's you're probably taking up so much less of that when you're sweating. And so as a result, you're just really losing the efficacy of it. And probably that's why you're not meeting your treatment goals whenever we kind of follow up. That's a good point.
Yeah. So usually for outside guys, I recommend something else. And talking about something else, I mean, well, I don't know. Any final thoughts on the gels?
No, I think we covered it all.
Patches are pretty much the same. You put on a patch instead of the gel. It's the same thing. You can still have transference on those as well, even though it's not a gel. All right. So that
I think a little bit more skin irritation with the patches, if I remember correctly.
Great point. So that leads us to our next one, which you are much more knowledgeable in, the nasal spray testosterone called Natesto. So Kevin, can you kind of, it's been around for a while, but it's kind of been given new life through a lot of research here, especially through the University of Miami, where we were. And Kevin, you've done some of that research. So describe to us the nasal spray. It's called Natesto.
Yeah. So Natesto, just like Justin said, this is a nasal spray. You actually do it about twice to three times a day, and you just kind of inject it into the nostril. Now, why has this kind of taken on some more life recently? Testosterone is a contraceptive. Exogenous testosterone is a contraceptive. What does that mean? So if you are in your reproductive years and you take testosterone, Justin and I harp on this in almost like in every other episode.
Absolutely.
You will have the potential to basically suppress your sperm production. And as a result, if you're trying to conceive, you could be spending a year trying to conceive and be like, why are we not being successful? It's because you essentially have suppressed your sperm production and you have no sperm in your ejaculate. And so at the University of Miami, a lot of this was spearheaded by my mentor, Dr. Ranjith Ramaswamy. And he kind of took a look at, well, a lot of this suppression was going on because of its impact on our HPG axis. So basically, and really to summarize really in layman's term, you got your hypothalamus up at the brain level that kind of acts, that instructs the pituitary, which is a little bit below that, which instructs your, you know, your testis, right? Tells it what to do. And this axis kind of tells us how to make sperm and make testosterone. When you take testosterone, for the most part, it shuts the system down. Now, the testo is interesting in that it acts in a very, very short half-life. That's why you have to do it 2 to 3 times a day, because it's only in your system for like an hour, hour and a half. And because it pulses like that, if you think about it, it pulses, it almost kind of replicates the way some of the messengers in your brain pulses too. And so as a result, you don't get that prolonged suppression. And as a result, you still keep getting these hormones that are fired. So that was a whole hypothesis of why the testo could be great as, you know, trying to increase serum testosterone levels while at the same time preserving your ability, your spermatogenesis, your ability to produce sperm. And so they did a really great study. It was a single arm open label study, taking a look at it, and they studied for about 6 months. And in that 6 month period, they saw, now keywords being the majority of patients, they saw preservation of your hormones that dictate whether you're making sperm, as well as preservation of the majority of patients' sperm parameters. Now, I always use that word majority for my patients because I'm like, look, if you want to give this a try, it's good, but we're going to have to keep a close eye on it because you could fall into that small percentage where you could still get suppression of your sperm production. But it is now an option for patients that are during their years of reproductive years that want to increase their T. It is an option.
It's interesting. It's such a fascinating space because, you know, we were always taught that taking any kind of tea is going to kill your sperm. And now, like you said, not 100% of the patients were able to preserve their semen parameters, but a majority were, which right. is a huge difference from, you know, previous stuff. So it's very interesting because, you know, we've both seen patients who have unfortunately were on T, they were never told it caused them infertility, and they just feel like complete shit when they get off of it.
Yeah.
And that's that's where, you know, something like this may play a role potentially. Now there's other things we can give, and you know, that conversation is a whole other talk in itself. It's going to be a different episode when we're talking about maintaining your fertility while increasing your testosterone or preserving your testosterone levels. But you know, it's a really interesting thing. Now, a couple of things to consider, right? Things that people didn't like about the medication, unfortunately, was the nasal spray itself, right? It was the mechanism of use, because I think a lot of them, the major side effect was runny nose or irritation of their nasal nose. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I've actually given it to a couple of my patients here in LA, and that the compliance of willing to stay on it is just, it feels like you have the sinus infection or you're just completely congested and you start getting some like rhinorrhea. It's just, they hate it. And they kind of stop after like a few days. Now, back in Miami, when I was over at University of Miami during the training, I had a lot more patients that liked it, that enjoyed it, that were fine with it. But that is one of the main pain points. For the pain points is you're taking it 2 to 3 times a day, which is, come on, for guys, we try to simplify things.
Yeah.
2 to 3 times a day, it's hard.
I mean, the good news is you pull it out of your pocket, you just go, and then you're good, right?
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, no, look. At the end of the day, I think it offers more tools for us as urologists, especially in the realm of fertility for patients who are still seeking to maintain fertility. Like you said, Justin, we could talk all about all the other stuff, Clomid and Clomiphene in another talk, whatever, but you know, getting actual exogenous T, there is some sort of still more symptom improvement versus some of those other agents.
Oh, I agree 100%. I will always tell a patient that you're never going to feel as good as you did on actual testosterone putting you on these other things. It's just a fact. Most people just don't. They just don't. And they're excited to get back on the T once they're done.
That's the exact point. Like most guys that we put on these other agents that are non-exogenous testosterone always want to, like, they want to get back on the T because you're never achieving that level. Now, so that's the testo. Great option. Intranasal testosterone really kind of made a comeback in the past few years. Now, Justin, why don't we talk about, you know, one of the ones that you kind of see a lot of commercials on television, these long-term injections, or Avid. Talk to us about Avid.
So Avid is, you know, its generic name is testosterone undecanoate. And basically it's similar to testosterone cypionate. However, its oil is, you know, it's just pharmacologically different in that it lasts longer. It's a slower half-life, a significantly slower half-life. So it stays in your body much, much longer than, you know, testosterone cypionate. It's actually administered the same way, intramuscular. But because that oil that is, you know, kind of the proprietary difference in how the testosterone actually is distributed and broken down by your body, it has inherently different risks. Now, I think I'm a fan of Avid. I do treat patients with Avid because I think it's one of those things where, and we'll go into another option, you know, the next option will be, you know, we're talking about is the implants, Testapel. I prefer it to Testapel for several reasons, and we'll break it down later. But
yeah,
the first thing is it's just one shot in your butt. Unlike the SIP, which is weekly, the first injection is you have a second injection after 4 weeks, and then it's 10 weeks after that, every 10 weeks. This one has to be done by a healthcare provider. It could be a nurse, could be a nurse practitioner, could be a physician. They have to have gotten the certification, the Avid certification, just because of the side effect profile. Now, the side effect profile in general is very safe. This is a very safe medication. But there's two things that you have to think about here. One is something called POM, which is pulmonary oil microembolism. Now, because this oil is pretty thick, it lasts a long time, the concern is accidentally injecting it into your artery and sending that oil into your lungs, causing an embolism. In general, even if that happens, there's nothing to do. It's pretty safe. You have a little discomfort. You have some coughing, a little bit of wheezing. You can be hospitalized for these things. The risk is very, very low. But that's why it's given by a healthcare professional, because we're trained on how to appropriately administer it. It's quite simple. We inject it intramuscular. We pull back. If there's blood, it's probably in a vessel. We're not going to inject it. We re-inject it again. And as long as there's no blood, we inject it over about a 60-second time period slowly into your body. So that's the first risk. The second risk is having an allergic reaction. Small percentage of people are allergic to this oil. So what happens is after the injection, after every injection, we ask you to say 30 minutes after the injection to make sure you're not having an allergic reaction. Typically, you don't have it the first time, you're probably going to be okay for the second time. But, you know, sometimes it's secondary, tertiary, can cause allergic reactions, right? That's kind of how your body reacts and the allergy process can be. But in general, it's pretty painless. It's an IM injection. You're doing it less often. You're not going to get those highs that you have with the test sip, but you're going to get a nice steady baseline. So I think it's a pretty great medication. I don't know. Kevin, what do you think?
I love Avid. It almost fits right in that perfect in between that a large majority of our patients who are generally have just hypogonadism that they didn't know about. It really gets them to their treatment goals, gets you to a good T level, and it hasn't consumed your life. You're not doing weekly injections. You're coming in essentially every 10 weeks after the first two injections. That's awesome. Yeah. You have a little marker. You come in every 2 months, get an injection, and, you know, I think it's fabulous. Now, the only downsides are just having to sit around and get monitored for that, but I think it's a small price to pay for truly something, a fantastic vehicle for testosterone.
Yeah, and I think that leads us into the subcutaneous implants, the Testapel. Kev, tell us a little about Testapel.
So Testapel, these are testosterone pellets, small ones that are actually implanted most of the time into the buttock area. And usually you get about like starting off around 8 to 10 of these pellets kind of get placed in there. It is a procedure that's done by a healthcare professional. So just to kind of summarize kind of how this is done, you're going to kind of be laid on your side and then healthcare professional is going to inject some lidocaine or some numbing anesthesia. Right, just to kind of help numb up the area. And then they're going to introduce a trocar that's going to slide right underneath that subcutaneous area, right underneath the skin, and then place a bunch of these pellets. Now, these are great options. And you generally, after you get them placed, you go from anywhere between 3 to 6 months to kind of have them replaced. It really depends on how you're kind of taking it, how your labs kind of look, and how you're feeling. So it's a great option because it's like a VEED. You're coming in you know, prolonged time frames before you have to get them done. My only thing against it, now, some of the negatives of it, it's potential to get some extrusion. The pellets can come out, right? And you can get some irritation at the site of where you get them placed. But it's a procedure that's being done, right?
I agree 100%.
And I have some patients who love it and who just like live by it and want it. But I always tell them like, hey, look, like, just think of it. We could do a shot and you just come in a little bit more.
100%. Listen, if I'm choosing between Testapel or Aveed, I'm taking Aveed every time. And I tell my patients that too. The way I tell patients exactly what you said, but I say, listen, Testapel is great, but it's literally and figuratively a pain in the ass for you.
Right?
It's actually going to hurt your ass because I'm going a procedure and it's literally just you laying there and it's just annoying, right? I think the perfect patient, and I've thought about this for a while, I think there's like one perfect patient in my mind, is probably a patient at a nursing home, a guy who's old at the nursing home who, you know, probably doesn't have the means to get in there every 10 weeks.
That's a good point.
Probably is good for the 6 month follow up where you put it in, you know, he gets it. He's at a steady state. You don't have to worry about it. You follow him up every 6 months anyway.
That's
you
a good
get
point.
The blood work, and then that's it. That for me is the perfect Testapel patient. But I think if you're a younger person, if you have the means to get back and forth every 10 weeks, I think that Aveed is the preferred method. Because I wouldn't want to get a procedure. I wouldn't want to get a procedure every time. Listen, I'm stabbing you with a needle to get an to give you local. I'm taking a knife. I'm cutting you. I'm stabbing you again with a trocar. Then I'm suturing you up probably with a couple sutures, which is how I usually do it because I don't want you to bleed. You might have some bleeding. You might have some bruising. I always ask if people are interested in it, what their job is, because if they're sitting long times during the day, I usually don't recommend it because they're going to be sore for a couple of days and they may like mess up their positioning and they may not want that. So, you know, I tend to lean against Testapel unless it's a specific patient. But once again, like you said, some people come in asking for it. They want it. And listen, I talk to you about it, but if that's what you want, it's still a great option. Wouldn't be my preferred option, but I think it's still a great option. So yeah, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, it's that's what's great about testosterone. You have this menu of everything that we can offer. So if Testapel fits what you think would work for you, then it's an excellent option. But also remember, it's not just one side of your buttocks. When you come back, we go to the other side. So we're going back and forth. It doesn't stop, dude. All right, so now, you know, we've covered almost all the modalities except for one that until recently was not considered a route for testosterone because of potential injuries to the liver. So we're going to let Justin cover this. It is our final formulation, which is oral testosterone. Justin, take it away.
So oral testosterone was off the market for many, many years. In fact, in our guidelines for the longest time, it said, do not take oral testosterone. Literally said, don't take oral testosterone because of fear of liver dysfunction. And in fact, a lot of my mentors and some of the older school guys, even though it doesn't impact your liver testosterone, still because of those old days of take of those thoughts where it was a first pass system to your liver, they still get liver function tests. You know, some people I know
it's
still
like instinct. Get them. They're just like, right. Oh, I got to get the liver function test. You know,
which I don't do. There's no indication for it anymore. There's no testosterone does not impact the liver function at all. So you know that's nothing to worry about. But they, you know, with the advancement of pharmaceuticals and medical technologies, we've now created several options of oral testosterone, which has come in the market in the last, what? I guess it's been around probably the 3-4 years, but it's really started to blow up, I feel like, in the last year or two, where, you know, there's three brands. There's the Jotenzo, Tulando, and Kaisertrex. They're pretty similar, but there's different doses with how you dose them. And they're, because they're different brands, they're pretty, they're commercial, right? Testosterone cypionate is a generic medication.
Right.
A lot of the other things, Androgel is a generic medication. You know, Avita is not a generic medication. It is a commercial brand. These are actually commercial. So one of the issues that I've had is getting it covered by is payment, right? These are often a little bit more expensive, a little bit harder to get, but people like the fact that you can take an oral medicine and improve your testosterone. Now, the difference here currently in this current format is you have to take it twice a day, once in the morning, once at lunchtime, both times with food. And it's very important that you have to take it with food because it impacts the absorption of the medication, which is why, you know, one of the reasons it was designed this way was so, you know, the first pass with the liver, so it had to go through another mechanism. But, you know, I think the biggest benefit of this medication, and we alluded it to, you know, it's a good way to bring it full circle, is with the testosterone cypionate, testosterone enanthate, the biggest concern was the erythrocytosis, the proliferation of the red blood cells and the increased blood thickness, which theoretically could lead to a clot or something like that. The oral medications there's pretty convincing data. You really haven't been seeing much of the red blood cell proliferation. And it's probably because of the oral mechanism, right? It's by the way that the body's absorbing it. So this is a really good option for people who have been struggling with high hematocrit.
Love it. Exactly.
And that's really a great option for these patients, right? You know, they want to be on testosterone, but we're worried that we don't want to keep them having get blood draws all the time. We don't want to put them through that process. We don't want to put them at risk. This is a great option for those patients. So that's really where I've been using it. But of course, you know, I had a guy yesterday, he called me, said, you know, I want to try the oral testosterone. So we're going to try the oral testosterone just because he wants to try it out. He'd rather take an oral medicine. So, you know, I'm happy to give this medication to whoever wants it. But, you know, some people don't like the, you know, it's hard enough to get guys to take one thing a day, some taking it twice a day with food. And I always ask people's schedules, would this be conducive to their schedule? If you work from home, it's one thing, you're probably fine. If you're in a car all day trying to do some work, it's harder to time this medication. So lifestyle is a big impact factor here.
You make a great point. I remember, I think it was in med school where they go through and say like, all right, I want you to they take like six, like a bunch of like placebo pills and just take them throughout the day. And it's very hard actually to take a lot of pills throughout the day and remember. But for some patients, it's not hard, or it's, they're like, I'm going to be very good about it. I'm going to take those pills. So it's whatever works for you. Like if it's your, if you're going to be someone that forgets about, you know, your testosterone, then the longer formulations make more sense. The Avid, all that stuff makes more sense. You have to just show up a few times throughout the year. But if you're someone that, you know, is good about making sure that you're going to follow your regimen, then I think the oral pills are a fantastic option, especially for guys who don't like needles, who don't want a procedure to place pellets. This is an awesome option, these oral formulations. So testosterone is great. You got everything. Yeah, everything that you need to really fit anyone's really needs. And that's why the conversations a lot that we have in front of patients is to go over all that. And we can kind of now refer to this episode, just be like, listen to this first before you come in. We can really answer some more specific questions.
Honestly, I didn't even realize that. That's good. I'm going to absolutely like link this to something. And that's a great idea. But yeah, no, I think, listen, at the end of the day, we have a full menu, all you can eat buffet of testosterone options. That's what it is. If there's one option that doesn't work for you, we'll find another option. If there's one option that's concerning for your health, we'll find another option. If there's something that you can afford versus cannot afford, if it's an insurance option issue, we can find another option. So I think it's a pretty good time to, you know, talk with your doctor if you have low testosterone, to figure out what works for you, right? So don't think that there's no hope for me. You know, I have low testosterone. I don't want to do injections. If you listen to this episode, you know, there's a billion ways to not inject yourself and get to a therapeutic level and feel better, live your best life, and, you know, get your health back. It's just really, you have to go talk with your doctor about it in order for us to help achieve that goal.
You're absolutely correct. Look, low testosterone is not something you have to live with. If you have the hypogonadosystems, if you have erectile dysfunction, low energy, low libido, again, this is stuff that you don't have to live with, but you don't have to go straight to injections. There's so many options. So again, get in front of a healthcare professional, talk to them. So many options. You know, I hope you learned something from this episode.
Yeah, I think this was great. I really enjoyed this. I think we wrap it up. Does that sound good?
Sounds good.
All right, guys. Thanks for always listening to our episodes. As always, can follow us on @TheManUpPod on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter. YouTube is live. We have now our good cameras. Finally, it's officially functioning. So, you know, sign up for our YouTube channel, subscribe, give us all reviews on all the podcasting platforms as well, Spotify, iTunes as well. So that's always appreciated. Anything else, Kev?
Nope. Hope you learned something.
All right, guys. Enjoy. Until next time. Bye.